Hello, this is Wallace Kleindienst, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Northland Views. We'll be reading today from the White Mountain Independent and the Payson Roundup. And from Pinetop Lakeside is the headline. Pinetop Lakeside Council hears updates on schools and community efforts. A story by Tony Gibbons. Updates on student success, faculty challenges, and the future of local education, alongside ongoing community outreach efforts, set the tone for the April 2nd Pinetop Lakeside Town Council meeting. Blue Ridge Unified School District Superintendent Jonathan Roloff didn't shy away from the challenges facing the school district, but he made it just as clear that success is already happening inside the classroom. Framing his remarks as a state of the district, Roloff walked the council through both the successes and the difficulties facing Blue Ridge Unified School District, highlighting standout student achievements while also pointing to aging facilities, funding gaps, and difficult decisions ahead. Among those successes, one name stood out, Rain Dimlawat. As a senior at Blue Ridge High School, Rain has built a record of excellence that now reaches across the state. Recently, Rain was named a 2026 Flynn Scholar, one of Arizona's most competitive and prestigious academic honors, placing her among a small group of students recognized each year for achievement, leadership, and service. In December, Dimlawat was also selected as Student of the Month by the Arizona State Board of Education, an honor that reflects not only academic performance, but character and leadership. Rain carries a 5.0 GPA, a result of both a rigorous course load and consistent dedication. But as Roloff noted, Rain's success represents more than grades. Students like Dimlawat, he said, are the result of a system where support, opportunity, and high expectations come together, where students are pushed to succeed and given the tools to do it. Her story, Roloff added, reflects what is happening across the district. He said, if you can be a Flynn Scholar at Blue Ridge, any student can be successful. Roloff pointed to other academic and extracurricular successes, from a state spelling bee qualifier to student participation in the state science fair, as well as a growing theater program that recently staged Hello Dolly. Roloff then shifted to the football field, leaning into a moment that still carries weight for the school. Blue Ridge, he said, was the only team, to beat the Round Valley Elks, the eventual state champions, a hard-fought win that broke what would have otherwise been a perfect season for the Elks. If it weren't for us, they would have been undefeated, Roloff said, recalling the game. Our guys played tough. Our kids are doing amazing things, Roloff said, also highlighting staff contributions from teachers expanding programs like Future Business Leaders of America to maintenance crews keeping aging systems running. That aging infrastructure, however, quickly became the heart of his presentation. Roloff described a district operating in what he called a state of deferred maintenance, where key systems are working far beyond their expected lifespan. Cooling towers, for example, are roughly 30 years old, double their intended life, and corroded pipes are damaging already aging HVAC systems. Roloff said there are certain things you can maintain, but at some point, he said, you have to replace. He also pointed to foundational issues at the elementary school where structural problems have caused visible heaving in hallways, severe enough in some areas to prevent doors from opening fully. Roloff said, we're not looking for fancy. He said, we just want to be functional and serve people the way they need to be served. Funding, however, remains a major obstacle. Roloff said the district operates without bond or override funding, while also navigating the loss of federal COVID-era relief funds and declining enrollment, a combination that has steadily eroded its financial footing. At the same time, rising costs are adding new pressure, particularly when it comes to employee benefits. Health insurance policies are skyrocketing, Roloff said. As a district, we're trying to keep up with that, but there's a point when we'll not be able to do so. And from Springerville is the headline. Game and Fish asked public for help in Springerville elk dumping case. A story by Jen Morea. Two skinned elk quarters were discovered dumped along the Little Colorado River in Springerville, prompting the Arizona Game and Fish Department to ask the public for help identifying the person responsible. According to an April 9th news release from the Arizona Game and Fish Department, the elk remains were found along a riverbank near the Riverwalk Trail and the bridge on West Airport Road. Investigators believe the elk quarters were dumped sometime between the evening of March 22nd and the morning of March 23rd. Investigators believe the suspect may have been driving a white 3/4-ton pickup truck equipped with Cooper Discoverer AT3 XLT tires. In the release, wildlife manager Legend Watson called the act both illegal and wasteful. Watson said, "If anyone has information regarding this illegal and wasteful act, please report it." He said, "Poachers are thieves who steal Arizona's most precious natural resource. If you have any information, including possible vehicles involved or people of interest, please come forward and help us bring those responsible to justice." Under Arizona law, hunters are required to properly salvage edible portions of game animals. Leaving usable meat behind or dumping it can result in criminal charges under the state's wanton waste laws. Game and fish investigators handle violations such as illegal hunting, waste of game animals, and other poaching-related offenses. Officials say cases like this often depend on tips from the public, with information reported through the Operation Game Theft Program helping identify suspects in wildlife crimes. And from the White Mountain Apache Tribe is the headline. White Mountain Apache Tribe elects new council members. A story by Gwendina Gatewood. On April 1st, members of the White Mountain Apache Tribe gathered to take part in a process that reaches far beyond ballots and tally sheets. Election day on that day brought together voters from Cibacue, Cedar Creek, Carrizo, 7 Mile, East Fork, White River, McNary, and Canyon Day, each carrying with them not only a vote, but a voice shaped by family, history, and responsibility to the future. The general council election marked a continuation of the tribe's exercise of sovereignty where leadership is determined by the people and grounded in the will of the community. From early morning to the close of polls, precinct workers, election officials, and voters participated in a coordinated effort that reflects both structure and trust in the system that guides tribal governance. At the center of the effort is a White Mountain Apache Election Commission composed of 9 members entrusted with administering the entire election process. Their work begins long before Election Day and continues through certification. The commission is responsible for compiling and reviewing documentation on candidate eligibility, verifying nomination signatures, ensuring voter eligibility, coordinating public outreach, preparing ballots, selecting and training precinct workers, and overseeing the vote tally process. The role is both administrative and protective, ensuring that each step of the election is conducted with integrity and consistency. Following the close of the polls, the Election Commission announced unofficial results in the local radio station KNNB, with final certification scheduled for 9 in the morning the following day by the White Mountain Apache Tribal Council. The commission said, "We'd like to thank each and every one of the precinct workers who worked hard today." They said, "We also thank all the voters for participating in this important process." So the Tribal Council results. In District 1, the race reflected a closely engaged electorate. Oral Henry was elected and received 353 total votes, narrowly edging Wayne Ivins, who received 341 votes. The results highlighted the importance of each individual vote in shaping representation at the district level. In District Number 2, voters elected Ray Goklisch, who secured 258 votes, over Schrader Griggs, who received 193. Ray will now represent District 2 beginning May 2nd. That outcome demonstrated strong participation from Cedar Creek and Carrizo communities. In District 3, Cynthia Armstrong was elected and received 546 votes, followed by Annette Tindat with 466 votes. The combined totals from Seven Mile and East Fork reflected steady turnout and continued engagement from voters in those areas. District 4 recorded some of the highest vote totals of the election. Gerald Tinnis Sr. received 1,604 votes, followed by Delbert Altha Jr. with 1,416 and Emil Lupe with 1,055 votes. This district has two seats to fill. Gerald Tinnis Sr. and Delbert Altha Jr. will be assuming the two seats. The results underscored the scale of participation across White River, McNary, and Canyon Day, which represents the biggest district for the reservation. The race for vice chairman drew participation from all across the districts. Marty Paxson received 2,498 votes, defeating Irwin Thompson, who got 1,726. In the chairman race, Orlando Carroll received 2,149 votes, surpassing Gary Alcasey, who received 2,069 votes, a close vote there. The close margin reflected an engaged electorate and underscored the importance of turnout across every district. And from St. John's is a headline. On a musical note, Revolution and Redemption takes the stage in St. John's High School's production of Les Miserables, a story by Jen Morea. Revolution, sacrifice, and redemption came to life on the stages of the St. John's High School as the drama department presented Les Miserables, school edition, bringing Victor Hugo's sweeping story of justice, mercy, and human resilience to local audiences. Directed by Natalie Ingram, the production ran from March 26th to March 30th in the Letty A. Patterson Auditorium and featured two alternating casts. The performance intended for this article featured the white cast, whose students delivered a moving interpretation of the classic musical based on Victor Hugo's novel. Ingram said, "It's hard to put into words what it's meant to me to direct these kids in this musical." She said, "It's been once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that I have not taken lightly and have cherished every minute." Ingram explained that choosing Les Miserables was intentional because of the powerful story and the opportunity it gave students to take one of the music theater's most demanding productions on. She said the show's theme of justice, mercy, sacrifice, and redemption continue to resonate across generations and offer meaningful lessons for young performers as they step into complex characters and emotionally driven music. Drama program director Brandy Overson said the production reflected the extraordinary collaboration required to bring such an ambitious musical to the stage, crediting the dedication of students, staff, and volunteers. At the center of the story is Jean Valjean, portrayed by Brexen Isley, the student, a former prisoner who, after spending 19 years on a chain gang, is released on parole and struggles to rebuild his life in France. Shunned by society, Valjean finds unexpected compassion from a bishop who gives him a second chance, inspiring him to adopt a new identity and live a life defined by mercy rather than bitterness. Over time, he becomes a respected factory owner and mayor, but his past continues to follow him in the form of Inspector Javert. Isley carried the role with a strong stage presence, capturing both the character's physical strength and emotional vulnerability. Opposing Valjean is a relentless Javert, played by his student Carter Smith, whose commanding performance reflected the character's unwavering belief in the rule of law. Madeline Gardner delivered a heartfelt portrayal of Fantine, whose struggle and sacrifice for her daughter remains one of the musical's most emotional storylines. Madeline's performance brought depth and sincerity to the role, drawing the audience into the character's tragic journey. You're tuned in to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you're listening to Northland Views. And from Sholo is a headline, Mountain Strong, A Little Stronger with New Office Location, a story by Vicky Matsumonji. April 1st was a momentous day for Mountain Strong Behavioral Health Sciences, as it was the first day of expansion in the new offices at 5171 Cub Lake Road in Solo, marked with a ribbon cutting through the Solo Chamber of Commerce, officially welcoming them to their new home. April 1st also marked Mountain Strong's third anniversary in serving the community with several counseling and therapy programs for teens to adults. As the year moves forward, Mountain Strong is ready to apply their expertise where they excel, offering an array of counseling and therapy programs that fit any client's needs, which includes dialectical behavior therapy, which is an evidence-based psychotherapy program to treat personality disorders and interpersonal conflicts, cognitive behavioral therapy, which addresses dysfunctional emotions, behaviors, and cognitive psychotherapy, motivational therapy, which helps people overcome mental illness, substance abuse, and other debilitating problems in dealing with life's adversities, group therapy for individuals and families, and finally, eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing, which helps with parents suffering from PTSD. EMDR helps to unblock deep-seated suffering from past emotional wounds. Mountain Strong accepts Blue Cross and Blue Shield and Medicare. And in news from the world of sports is the headline, Solo baseball team is chasing history, a story by Keith Morris. They're chasing history and gaining on it. Solo's baseball team is hunting its first region championship in 13 years. A two-game sweep of four-time defending 3A East champion Snowflake leaves the number 10 Cougars in the lead in the race for the 3A East title. The Cougars are 17-3 overall, 18-2 in ranking games, and 4-0 in the region. Two games against number 24 Blue Ridge loom large in Lakeside coming up on April 22nd and at home on April 24th. The Yellow Jackets are 4-1 in the region with their region title in their sights as well. Winning both games would give Solo a firm grip on first place. The Cougars last won a regional crown when they went 8-0 to claim the 2013 Division III Section 1 championship under Coach Dave Nicholas, who was voted Region Coach of the Year. Hal Frost is in his first season as varsity head baseball coach after serving as a junior varsity coach the past 7 years. He is a 2004 Solo High graduate who played for Dave Nicholas. Hal said, "It's an honor to be part of the rich tradition here with Cougar baseball." He said, "It's a team with a plenty of potential to finish strong." Frost said, "It's a great mix of senior leadership and young, talented players. There is not an easy out in our lineup, and we got arms that can carry us forward. We have our sights set, and our goals as a team will move us forward." It's been 35 years since Solo won the second of its two 3A state titles back in 1991 after winning its first one in 1989. Gary Williams was the baseball coach for both championships. And in sports news from Snowflake is the headline, Snowflake wins boys and girls title on pace and track, a story by Keith Morris. 1 year, Snowflake won't win both the boys and girls state track and field championships. However, this season might not bring that outcome, given the Lobos' ongoing impressiveness. Snowflake has won the last five boys Division IV/Division III state championship and the past three girls state titles. And the Lobos won both the boys and girls team titles in the fifth annual RVN3 Bubba Nielsen Invitational at Payson on April 10th. J.C. Ballard won four events to lead the Snowflake girls to win the 21-team event. Ballard won the 100 meters, the 100 hurdles, and the 300 hurdles. The Lobos' Amory Cardin won the pole vault. Also for Snowflake, Kinsey Flake took third in the 400, Brooklyn Davis third in the 300 hurdles, and Mayreed Stradling finished second in the shot put. Solo's Lily Angel won two individual events and ran on a winning tree. Solo's Stevie Bruschelti won the discus Also for Sholo, Webb placed second in the 100 and second in the 100. Noel Harris won both the high jump and ran on the Blue Ridge Victorious 1600 relay. And for our last headline from the White Mountains, from Heber is the headline, The Fight for the Heber Wild Horses, a story by Tony Gibbons. On March 3rd, the U.S. Forest Service announced that four horses believed to be from the Heber herd were found dead with bullet wounds on the Black Mesa Ranger District outside Heber Overgaard. The deaths add to a series of killings that has unfolded across the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest for nearly a decade. Nine horses were discovered shot earlier this year, and investigators believe that more than 70 Heber wild horses have been killed since 2018. Among them was a young foal found in 2021, badly wounded by gunfire and left crippled until law enforcement officers were forced to euthanize the animal where it lay. The first confirmed shootings were reported in 2018 when two stallions were found dead on the Black Mesa Ranger District. At least 11 more horses were killed in 2019, followed by 15 in early 2020. One of the largest incidents occurred in October 2022, when roughly 30 horses were found shot dead across the forest. For a herd estimated at only a few hundred animals, the losses are staggering, and to date, no one has been charged. In an email dated, April 6th, the Forest Service said the incident remains under investigation. Tammy Slade of the Navajo County said, the horses referenced are feral horses and should not be confused with wild horses protected under the 1971 Wild Free Roaming Horses and Burro Act. The Heber Wild Horse Territory itself was established following passage of the 1971 Act, and the Heber herd has since been managed within that designated area. But the agency's statement draws a distinction between those protected horses and the animals involved in the recent shootings, a line that some advocates strongly dispute. Horse advocate and longtime Heber Overgaard resident and author Robert Hutchinson sees the situation very differently. Hutchinson said, the Forest Service and some of the ranchers won't be satisfied until the number is zero. Hutchinson said the horse's status has long been misunderstood, arguing they're a part of an historic lineage tied to the region. He said, I refer to them as ancient Mugeon Mustangs, adding that he believes their history is connected to early military and Western horse populations. Hutchinson said, even the Forest Service recognizes their movement beyond those boundaries. They are not confined to lines on a map. And in news from Payson, from the Payson Roundup, is the headline, Town's Mountain Bike Trail Opens, Hosts NICA State Finals This Weekend, a story by David Cibola. Berms, turns, tabletops, and climbs. Payson's newest mountain bike trail is ready to roll. To celebrate the completion of the town's Ubuntu Trail, Parks and Recreation has prepared an afternoon of fun at the Payson Event Center located at 1400 South Beeline Highway on April 17th. Then, that following Saturday, some 400 student athletes from across the state will christen the single track during the National Interscholastic Cycling Association's, also known as NICA, final competition of its middle school and high school mountain bike race series. We're actually technically done building it, said Rickus Grobler, recreational assistant. We have the Arizona Conservation Corps out there helping, so we're having them add another little section just for a little extra distance and to make use of the area that we have. And then it's just going back and fine-tuning. We'll probably add a few features here and there. The town's new trail itself is about 2.8 miles long, but the race course becomes a four-mile loop by adding in connector roads. Grobler and Payson Longhorns NICA coach Mac Voris, along with the newly founded Payson Area Volunteer Effort, known as PAVE, Trail Building Team, got rolling on designing and constructing the course shortly after the town finalized its plans to host the state finals late last year. Trail builders included several mountain bike-specific features along the course, including berms, tabletops, a rock garden, and a creek crossing. "We built a state championship course, not just a race course," said Vorse. "It's going to be challenging," he says, "even for the really fast kids. It's going to elevate racing in Arizona, in my opinion." Vorse said the 10-rider Longhorn team has been building its skills throughout the race series. He said they're riding really solid. People know that Payson will be at the race. Longhorn rider Cale Wilbanks earned a spot on the winner's podium at two of the four races he rode in this season, finishing fifth in the regional finals. The town will celebrate the Ubunta Trail's completion at the rodeo grounds at 1:30 in the afternoon on Friday, April 18th. On top of a ribbon cutting and giveaways, cyclists competing in the next day's race will have a last-minute opportunity to get on the course before the big event. All the NICA racers get there the day before to do a ride-through on the course so they can plan their strategy, said Grobler. "The way we designed it, our goal from the start, was for there to be many different line choices. It's up to them to determine which way is the fastest. Which way can they go the fastest for their skill level? That way, when the race is done and it's for the locals, you don't get bored riding the same thing over and over. You can ride it different ways every time," he added. Grobler, who immigrated from South Africa, took his oath of allegiance to become an American citizen in February of last year. Because he took the lead in designing and building the trail, town staff encouraged him to name it something meaningful to his native heritage. Borrowing from a phrase derived from Zulu Exutu, the word Ubuntu essentially translates to "I am because we are," Grobler said. "The trail is split up into segments too," he said, "so each segment also has a name. They all have a very unique character, and I wanted to give Mac some naming rights too, because none of this would have been possible without him." Well, that wraps up the Wednesday edition of Northland Views. I'll be back with you next week for the next edition of Northland Views. This is Wallace Kleindienst, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you so much for listening.